welcome to Detroit Today on 1019 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. So, indulge me for just a second and take the thing that you use to check email or surf the web or look at social media out of your pocket and look at the screen. What do you call this thing? You call it a phone, a cell phone. And it has become part of your life in a way that almost no other object that I can think of has. If you leave the house and don't have it, there's this incredible sense of panic that you get. Where's my phone? I need my phone. I can't go anywhere without my phone. And what's one of the first things you do every morning? Roll over, check the phone. What's one of the last things you do at night before you go to sleep? Look at the phone, see what's going on. This has become a huge part of our interpersonal and social ecosystem. These things connect us to news and information, to games, to our loved ones, and they do it in milliseconds and in ways that most of us never thought would be possible only two decades ago. These connections occur so fast that taking a call, by comparison, seems quite slow. And calls are often the thing that we do the least with these things in our hands. Every week, I get a report on my cell phone about all the activity that I've indulged. And every week, the lowest percentage is phone calls. Every once in a while, when I'm thinking about things we should be talking about here on Detroit Today, it's just the kind of everyday life observations that pop into my mind. And today's show is a really good example of it. A few months ago, I was having a conversation with my mother, who's about to be 80 years old, and who, like everybody else, has a cell phone and uses it for many different things. But she was confused in this conversation because she's looking at her voicemails and they were showing up as text, as they do on many phones. And she said, "I'm reading this text and I want to text the person back, but it won't let me. So my text is broken." And it occurred to me at that point that for her, somebody who has lived seven decades, a lot of this is probably pretty confusing. Why is my phone sending me texts about people who called? That's kind of the question she was asking. And that made me ask some questions about the phones, how we use them, and especially what we call them. Why do we still call these things phones when they do so much more than that? And how are these phones changing us? Are they making us more anxious, more alienated from others, more disconnected, even as they make it easier to be connected with each other? And if those things are true, if those are the questions that these things raise, what are the ways we need to learn to live with these things in our hands, in our pockets? Are we too attached to them? Will that attachment grow over time? Or should it be waning in some way? That's what I want to talk about today on the show. These things that we are obsessed with, these things that we pay, in some cases, more attention to than the people in our lives. And to talk about it, we've got a really great guest. Paul Levinson is a professor of communications and media studies at Fordham University in New York. He's also the author of many fiction and nonfiction books, but the one that is relevant to this conversation is titled Cell Phone, the story of the world's most mobile medium and how it has transformed everything. Paul Levinson, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good to be here.
So I want to start with this idea of the name, what we call this thing that we use for so many things. My phone is my connection to everything. And yet the thing that I do the least of it on it is talk to people, pick it up, dial a number, and have an old-fashioned conversation. You have spent a long time thinking about cell phones and the way they change us. I guess my first question is, why haven't we changed the way we think about these devices to match the way that we use them?
Well, Marshall McLuhan said a lot of important things, and one of the most important things that he said is, we drive into the future looking at the rear view mirror. And what he meant by that is, even though technologies do new things, we understand them and even call them by names that apply to earlier things. For example, the radio was for many years called the wireless. Because people knew that you could communicate through the telegraph and the telephone. That required wires way back then in the 19th century. And so the magical thing about radio is, well, hey, it could just be broadcast through the air. You didn't need any wires for the connection. And the cell phone, now called the smartphone, really obviously came from the telephone system. And the reason it was first invented was people wanted to cut the umbilical cord of the wire in their homes and offices and be able to have a conversation with people any place they might be, both the caller and the person who's called. Pretty soon, though, as you've pointed out, since the Internet was already catching on and really burgeoning in its impact and use during the 90s, the people who made these phones began to think, well, you know, if there was some way we could use them, people could use them to connect to the Internet, that would really be a great benefit. And right along with that was, well, hey, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could use this device to take a photograph anytime we want? You know, I remember growing up knowing some people who prided themselves on never leaving home without a little camera. This would be part of their lives. They loved looking at the world. They loved taking photographs. And a lot of people have felt this way. And the idea that in this device that you use to talk to people, to connect to the Internet, could also take photographs was one of the most brilliant ideas in history. And so, absolutely, there's no doubt that today, in 2022, that little device that you were talking about is used much more often to take photographs than it is to talk to people. And it's even used more often than that to log on to this app or that, you know, Twitter, Facebook, whatever you want to reach on the Internet. But the nomenclature is still in the rearview mirror and is still something, and it's going to be a long time, I think, before we give up that word phone.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we also have to kind of acknowledge the branding influence here and go back to the introduction, of course, of the iPhone by Apple, which is not the first smartphone, I don't think, but it is the one that kind of sets the pattern for the future. And the fact that even as Apple advertised this device, and I've got one sitting in front of me here and have had one pretty steadily since they introduced it, they introduced it as you know, a device that would do many different things. They called it a phone. It's a phone. It's an iPhone. It's not an iDevice or an iCommunicator. It's an iPhone. And I think, you know, because we live in a world where branding has so much influence over the way we think and speak about things, that has a lot to do with what happened as well. And in some ways, it seems like it has delayed a thinking about what this thing is and what influence it actually has over us.
Well, absolutely, and that was a very deliberate move. Apple didn't do that well with the Newton, which was basically a little portable computer that people could carry.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it was Steve Jobs himself or people in the Apple operation that came up with the idea of situating this internet-connecting device that would be totally portable, situating it in something you would call a phone. In retrospect, that was a brilliant idea, and that's what changed everything. And in fact, if you look at the history of technology, obviously Apple's invention of the home computer probably still is the most important of everything that it did. But as time went by, something like the iPod, which was a little portable device, that was very revolutionary, but certainly almost as important as the invention of the personal computer itself is the invention of the iPhone. And although there was some connectivity to the internet, there were BlackBerry devices. Barack Obama famously didn't want to give up his BlackBerry mm-hmm. when he entered the White House in 2009. That was just a few years after the iPhone. He was still using the BlackBerry. So there were devices that connected to the internet, but none had the power and magic of the iPhone. And one of the things that Steve Jobs did is he deliberately selected things like YouTube and said, hey, you know what, there's this app, YouTube, and YouTube was very new then also. It had just begun a few months earlier. And Jobs said, well, hey, let's put this app into the iPhone, and then people can watch videos on the phone. So it took that kind of mind to realize and implement all of these applications.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about the work that you've done thinking about what the cell phone has done to us, how it's changing our culture, and what you think about the way in which we're reacting, I guess, to those changes. What is the effect that the cell phone has had on us and our culture now that it's about 15 years old and we've got many different types and forms of it, but that of course it is a thing that we all feel like we need. I mean, it crosses all economic strata in terms of the reliance on it. Of course, crosses racial and geographic differences. I mean, it is ubiquitous in a way that that I certainly would never have thought it would be.
Well, it has changed our lives. And a good metaphor for the cell phone or smartphone, and indeed any technology, is that it's like a knife. It can do wonderful things in the hands of a surgeon. It can save people's lives. It can be used every day to cut food. In the hands of a criminal, it can do some really serious harm and damage. And that pretty much sums up the way that the cell phone has changed our lives. It has enabled us to instantly get information about just about anything. That's very important because, you know, prior to that, to get news about something, you had to have a newspaper or be near a newspaper stand. And then after that, you had to be in proximity to a radio or a television set. And that was pretty good. You know, the radios in cars, radios in homes, televisions in homes. But now, obviously, you carry in your pocket something that wherever you are, you can instantly find out what's going on in the world. So when you hear, you know, the sad news that Queen Elizabeth has died, and you want to find out, first of all, is it true or not, and you want some details, you can instantly get those details. And you can also instantly be in touch with email, with important business decisions and people, and for that matter, people, family, friends that you love and care about. So all that is really wonderful, and it's changed our lives for the better in those senses. And I think it's very important not to overlook those wonderful changes. But at the same time, as we know, if you log on to Facebook or Twitter, you may well see some vile garbage, an insane conspiracy theory. For example, in the early days of COVID, there was a nutcase theory going around that Bill Gates had somehow managed to put microchips into vaccines, mm-hmm. and if you got a vaccination, somehow, first of all, Gates wasn't even associated with Microsoft anymore, but somehow Microsoft would be able to track where you were, and that kind of insane theory was the least of it. There were far more even ugly and insane theories going around. So the problem is the same device that gives you facts and truth can give you complete dangerous garbage if you're not careful and you don't know what you're looking at. The other point is, as you were saying in your introduction, precisely because the phone is so portable and so easy to put by our bedside, take anywhere we want, if we're not careful, we can be connected to the world almost 24 hours a day. So, indeed, there are people who sleep with their phone right next to them. The last thing they do at night is look at the phone. If they get up at night in the middle of the night for a minute or two, they'll look at their phone. First thing they do in the morning is look at their phone. And it's not as if the phone requires that. And there's a way you can stop doing that if you don't want to do it. But if we're not careful, the phone can become too much and dominate our lives to the extent where we become the servant of the phone rather than vice versa.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking with Paul Levinson. He's a professor of communications and media studies at Fordham University, also author of a book titled Cell Phone, The Story of the World's Most Mobile Medium and How It Transformed Everything. We're talking about these devices that all of us pretty much have in our hands or in our pockets and that we rely on for so much communication and interaction. We also rely on them very heavily, I think, to organize and manage our lives. We want to hear from you during this conversation about the ways in which you use your cell phone. How is your cell phone most useful to you? Is it helpful? How do you think your cell phone makes your life easier? But also, we want to know the ways in which you feel like your phone maybe has changed you or even manipulates you, changes your thinking and the way you interact with other people. Does that make you skeptical of the cell phone and its power and its influence? Do you try to take time away from the cell phone for that reason? Put it someplace that you're not obsessing about what's on the screen all day when you're awake. Do you feel like you need to take control back from the cell phone? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Okay, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Paul Levinson, and we will get to your calls and social media comments. Especially let us know if you are listening to Detroit Today on a cell phone. I know a lot of folks who do that. Of course, people call into the show on their cell phones. We'll talk about how much those devices really matter to us. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. I'm talking with Paul Levinson. He's a professor of communications and media studies at Fordham University and author of the book Cell Phone, the story of the world's most mobile medium and how it has transformed everything. We are talking about our cell phones, our reliance on them, the things they bring us that make our lives more enjoyable or easier, and also the influence that this technology has over us, the way it is changing the way we live, the way we interact with each other, maybe even changing our brains, the way our brains are wired to think about communication and interaction. I want to hear from you about how you use your cell phone, how you think about your cell phone, how much you think about your cell phone. I will make an admission. Anybody who knows me and is around me much will tell you that the cell phone plays an outsized role in my life every day. Lots of people will say to me, you're spending too much time with that thing. That thing gets more attention than other things in your life. Call and tell us if you are in the same boat and how you'd try to take control back from the cell phone. Also, give us a sense of why you think we call these phones. Are these phones in the traditional sense of the word? And if not, what should we be calling them? Should we be thinking of other words that are more descriptive about what the cell phone actually is? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. And you can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Alex on Twitter says, think it's time we admit that Star Trek did it first, and we should call them tricorders. I'm a Trekkie, so I actually appreciate that humor, Alex. Big Neo on Twitter says, I do indeed call it a cell phone in my civilian life, but when I'm performing my military function, I call it my mobile device, or tell folks, contact me on my mobile. There is something more official sounding that way. That's a really interesting take on that as well. Before we get to callers, Paul, I want to go back to the metaphor that you drew on when we were talking about cell phones, and you said you compared it to a knife and said, look, in the right hands, it's a useful tool. In the wrong hands, it can be a deadly weapon. But it seems to me that there is something perhaps more universally dangerous, I guess, about the cell phone than there is about a knife, because it is able to manipulate our thoughts and our habits on such a grand scale. And there is something about that instantaneous nature of communication on the phone and the fact that you can get a much wider audience for your ideas through these devices than we ever have. That seems to me worth drawing distinction between other tools. That this is a tool of potentially mass destruction in a way that a lot of tools aren't.
Well, first of all, let me say all creds to, I think, Alex was
yes.
the name. So, yeah, absolutely, to Star Trek. It certainly changed my life. And yesterday was Star Trek Day, so it was a good time to mention it. But listen, I don't have such a negative view about the phone, about the cell phone, or about any technology. Ultimately, it's a question of who's in charge. And yes, it is the case that technologies, including phones, change us in ways that we might not be totally aware of. We find ourselves in situations in which, you know, how did I become someone who the last thing I do before I go to sleep at night is look at the phone? I don't do that with any other technology. It used to be, I don't know, brushing my teeth, you know, kissing my significant other, whatever. And so, yes, that has changed us, but it's not as if that's totally out of our control. And I think that people who study technology sometimes get so caught up in the metaphor that technologies are running us rather than vice versa, that they lose sight of the fundamental reality, which is that we can stop something, we can reduce using something anytime we like if we want to. And I know, as far as I'm concerned, I make a choice. Now, I'm like you. I am rarely away from my phone. I have many reasons for doing it. As you mentioned, I'm also a fiction writer, a science fiction writer. Mm-hmm. I'm still hoping Steven Spielberg is going to call me and you say, hey, I'm making a movie out of your most recent novel. So, you know, I don't want to miss that call. So, but I can control that. And look, I just got back from Cape Cod where we spend the summers, and I'm not so crazy that when I go swimming, I take the phone with me. By the way, there are ways that you can do that. There are waterproof things you can put the phone into and, you know, carry it in your bathing suit, or you can hang it around your neck. So, you know, I've made a decision. No, I'm swimming in Cape Cod Bay. It's beautiful. So I think that people maybe need to be encouraged to realize they can control the phone. It's not to say that the phone somehow has changed our very brain, or as you said, rewired our brain. That actually is a good science fiction story, but I think it's not. Yeah.
You think that's not true? All right. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. Let's go and start with Kevin in Sterling Heights. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Hey.
I don't think the name for the phone's ever going to change because phone is too easy to say. You might get the phonics people renaming it FON. But you know, when you call something one syllable, it's not going to get any simpler than that.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to think of it, Kevin. And I, you know, I don't have ideas about other, you know, single syllable words that would replace that. But let's think for a second about phone and go back to where did we get that word, right? So, you know, the telegraph is invented in the mid 1800s, and that literally, you know, means words over, you know, over distance, I guess.
Yeah.
And then the telephone comes not very long after that, and that means sound over distance. And then, of course, that gets abbreviated to phone, and that's what we end up with. So, I mean, there is kind of an evolution and an etymology that makes some logical sense. I guess the question I'm asking is, what's the next step of the evolution, Paul? There is a track here. It's just that it seems to have stopped dead on phone.
Well, one way in which it might change is, I've been saying for a few years, sooner or later we're going to have little tiny devices that we can implant in our earlobes. And, I mean, some people might not want that. And it's going to be hard to call that a phone.
Right, right.
So, as long as it's something you hold in your hand, as long as it's something where you can now, of course, see the number that you're dialing. But, you know, you still have to press something to dial, you know, the number. It has enough proximity to the old-fashioned landline that will still be comfortable calling it phones. What's interesting, of course, is if you think about, you know, new generations, they do come up with new names for things. Mm-hmm. And it is notable that the word phone has survived, you know, here in the 2020s. It's not as if teenagers are suddenly calling the phone something else.
Yeah, yeah. Really appreciate the call, Kevin, and your observation. Let's go to Marlene in Sault Ste. Marie. Marlene, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
All right. It's a nice morning here. Hope it is there, too.
Yes.
I'm in the UP, and I just wanted to note that not everybody gets cell phone service. There are lots of areas here that the phone just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
and not just here, but in Northern Lore, that doesn't happen in a lot of other countries. I think maybe it's the profit motive of there. If there are not enough people using the service, there's no profit or motivation to the companies to expand their service.
To make sure. Yeah, Marlene, tell me more about how that works for you. I mean, I assume you're calling on a cell phone right now, but you may not be. I guess you could be on a landline. Is that right?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. No, I'm on, I'm using a cell phone. And for me, it's really good because I wear hearing aids and I have Bluetooth. So the sound from your voice goes right into my head. It's not,
right.
You know, it's just, I can't always hear a phone very well.
Yeah, yeah. But so, but it's that if you were to drive from the Sioux, for instance, back down toward the Lower Peninsula, you would experience gap areas, is what you're saying.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Not as many going south as going west.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really great observation, Marlene, and I'm glad you called and made it. You know, Paul, I've been using that word ubiquitous during the conversation, and you know, Marlene's point I think makes a counter argument there that it isn't exactly ubiquitous, and there is this technology gap that still persists.
Absolutely. In fact, it's at the very least all over the United States. Fordham University, where, as you mentioned, I teach, is about a 20-minute drive from my home. There's a spot when I'm on the highway about 5 or 6 minutes where there's no phone service. That's here in Westchester County. As a matter of fact, I was telling my students just yesterday, in the building in which I teach, Faculty Memorial Hall at Fordham University in the Bronx, there's a floor where cell phone service.
You can't get service.
Right, which is ridiculous. And, you know, here I think it's important to keep in mind, indeed, it's the profit motive. And, you know, I've been fairly critical of Elon Musk in terms of his bungled attempt to buy Twitter and, you know, his view about Trump. But not to go off on that tangent, one of the things I really admire and appreciate about Elon Musk is his Starlink service, which, by the way, he got to Ukraine shortly after the war started. And I saw a report just, you know, a week or two ago that the Navajo Nation out west, which had a terrible cell phone service, they bought some of these Starlink uplink devices, and now they have fine service out there. So there are ways of handling this, and you know, look, the government obviously has so many things that it's doing. This might not seem like the highest priority, but I think sooner or later the government has to do something and fill in these gaps so everyone has cell phone service.
Yeah, yeah. No, Marlene, I really love that you listen up there in the Sioux, and I love that you called to share that observation. Let's go next to Mariah in Southgate. Mariah, welcome to the show.
Hey, Stephen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to add my viewpoint as a younger person. I think we're doing a disservice to people by telling them just to set boundaries with technology. My generation, you know, I was required to use a computer and then later a cell phone for jobs. But, you know, it's much easier if you're 30, 40 years old when cell phones come out and you already have a trajectory for your life. But when you're a young person and your parents are on TikTok, maybe they're taking pictures of you and putting that on Instagram. I mean, we need to talk about that. I just wanted to offer.
That's a really interesting observation, Mariah. And so give me a sense of, I mean, you don't have to tell me how old you are, but for you, something like the cell phone, I'm assuming, has always been part of your life. In other words, there wasn't an introduction of this device.
Yeah, I would say that's fair. I'm 31, so I grew up seeing, you know, the brick phone on Saved by the Bell, and my mom had one. But to me, it just feels like, you know, the Reagan administration saying, just say no to drugs. You can't just tell young people, set boundaries with Instagram. We don't know how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mariah, I think that is a really important point. This idea, Paul, of we do talk a lot about digital natives, I think, in a generational sense. My children, for instance, won't remember a time when there weren't cell phones because they were just too young. The use of laptops and other kinds of devices, the pervasiveness of social media, these are things they grew up with, and that is different for them when we say things like, hey, put that down, or let's do something else. I mean, that's a struggle I think lots of parents can relate to. But from the perspective of those children, the difficulty of resisting something that has been part of your life, your whole life, it does look different than it does for you and I.
Yeah, and I think, this is a very, very important point. I think that we need indeed to give kids more control over the communication that they use in their lives than generally happens. And we can talk about this for a couple of hours in and of itself. I mean, if you think about it, you know, Jean Piaget, the founder of, and considered the father of child psychology, he discovered that people, when they reach puberty, so 12, 13 years old, already have adult cognitive structures, meaning they think the same way that adults do, in a way that a three-year-old kid doesn't. And if you think about it, though, however, someone who's 12, 13, 14, to be instructed by their parents not to do this, you know, to limit their phone usage, I think it's really unfair. And I think that kids do deserve more autonomy. The other point, though, I would make is everyone for a long time, and people are still talking about the importance of literacy. And what they mean by that is learning how to read and write, because that's a currency that if you don't have it in our society, you're going to be at a serious disadvantage. We also need the equivalent of literacy in terms of learning how to get the most out of digital media in general and smartphones in particular. It's not something that we might come by naturally. It's something that maybe some people are better at it than others. And this, you know, should be communicated. How to get on top of the phone so that you can use it in a way that works best for you. And by the way, what that suggests is the answer is not the same for everyone. It depends what you're doing. It depends what you're seeking in life. I mean, obviously, to use a very, simple example, if you're looking for a job, you don't want to stay away from the phone. Mm-hmm. You want to be there if an offer comes through to respond as soon as possible. If you're on vacation, you might want, the phone for a variety of reasons, but that is a time when maybe you should stay away from the phone. So it's not that complicated. We just need to focus on that more, I think.
Yeah. Okay, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Paul Levinson of Fordham University and continue to hear from you on social and on the phone. Stephanie in Oak Park, Sharon in Pleasant Ridge, Marilyn in Oak Park will get to you. If you want to join them, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
Bringing you news that matters.
Stories that impact your life.
Music from the Motor City and around the world.
This is 101.9 WDET.
Detroit's NPR station.
This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. We're having a really wonderful conversation with Paul Levinson, who is a professor of communications and media studies at Fordham University, also the author of many nonfiction and fiction books, including Cell Phone, the story of the world's most mobile medium and how it has transformed everything. We're talking about cell phones, these things that have such a influence on our lives these days, not just as devices to call one another on, but devices to indulge all kinds of communication and interaction on. How important are they? How much are they changing our world? And how much control do we actually have over how much they're changing us? We want to hear from you, of course. 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Let's go next to Marilyn in Oak Park. Marilyn, welcome to the show.
Hello, Stephen and Paul. You've made several inaccurate assumptions regarding people and cell phones. And number one, not everyone has or wants a cell phone. Number two, believe it or not, some people want to be able to use a cell phone just to place calls and receive calls. Mm. Number three, not everyone checks their cell phone first thing in the morning and last thing at night. Number four, if I forget to leave home without taking my cell phone, I actually breathe a sigh of relief.
Do you?
Yes. I could go on and on, but I won't, because the phone I'm using may stop working at any minute. That's what I've found in the past. But the last thing is Thoreau. I'm not a big fan of Thoreau, but I did like his one quote, "We have become tools of our tools," and that's about it.
So Marilyn, tell me about the phone that you are using. Is it just a phone, and you don't have other things on it, or can't? I mean, there still are these.
So,
yeah, go ahead.
I've got. I should whisper this because everybody laughs, but I have a flip phone.
You do,
and it has everything that I don't need on it that keeps breaking, and so I'm on my second flip phone from this company, and they'll probably be sending me a third one pretty soon because all this other stuff that I really don't need keeps going wrong, and plus they told me, well, I live in a brick house, so that's part of the reason I have very poor
service
reception, yeah, or whatever they call it. And this all I want is just a phone where I can call somebody and receive calls.
Yeah, Marilyn, that's a really great perspective. And you know, I mean, I think I actually think my mom, who I started off the show talking about this conversation I had with her, I think she would really appreciate something like that too, because she doesn't use a lot of the other features, and when they show up on the phone, they confuse her. This idea, for instance, as I was talking about voicemails that get translated to text, she doesn't quite get that that's not a text, which is the other thing that the phone does. Paul, I wonder what you make of Marilyn's affinity for the flip phone and phones that don't do so many things.
Well, more power to Marilyn. And I think it's good. This is really the point I was making, that we human beings have the power to basically throw the phone away if we don't want it at all, to use a different kind of phone if all we want to do is talk. By the way, I think it's great that Marilyn lives in a brick house. I mean, you know, bricks are really good. They're, you know, very good in cold weather. So, you know, that's probably more important than getting good reception.
Than getting good cell service, right. Yeah. Marilyn, love the call and the observations. Let's go to Dan in Royal Oak. Dan, what's on your mind?
Hey, Stephen, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I think it's apropos, since we are on Detroit's greatest radio station, that Professor Levinson has a music career that I think should be plugged here. But also, I'm curious if the principles of the shallows, what the internet is doing to our brain, if that could be translated. Because Nicholas Carr does say that it is actually changing the physical physicalities of our brain. But also, real quick, the last statement, he started with a McLuhan statement. So I would like to say that for Mariah, that there's a McLuhan statement that goes, there's absolutely no inevitability as long as there's a willingness to contemplate what is happening. And I think a good doorway to start contemplating what is happening and what we're doing with our technology is the approach of media ecology. And I wonder if Professor Levinson would speak anything to that.
Yeah, yeah. Dan, I really appreciate the call. Of course, you said many different things there that we've got to kind of go back over. But first, Professor Levinson, do you want to talk about your music career, which we have not even mentioned?
Yeah, I'd be happy to, briefly. First of all, I try to do as much damage as possible. And also, I'm the kind of person where if I ever really love something, I always try to produce it. It's a good thing I wasn't interested in quantum mechanics. I probably would have blown up the world already. But I came out with my first album in 1972. It's called Twice Upon a Rhyme. And I came out with my second album in 2020. I wanted to build up my audience over 60 years. Years. That's called Welcome Up, Songs of Space and Time. You can listen to that on Spotify, Apple Music, and any place and every place. And to me, by the way, songwriting and writing lyrics and music is the same part of my brain as that I use to write books. So, you know, it goes pretty easily yes. for me. As far as media ecology is concerned, this is an important point because this is an example of a field of study dedicated to understanding the impact of media and how we can indeed better control media. Mm-hmm. And actually, Marshall McLuhan came up with the term in the 1960s. Neil Postman, who was my dissertation advisor, founded a program at New York University, which is where I got my PhD, called the Media Ecology Program. And there's now a Media Ecology Association created by Lance Strait, who is one of Neil Postman's students, that holds conferences every year. So if anyone is interested in what the cutting edge is in the thinking of how we can be on top of technologies rather than vice versa, you should check out anything that has to do with media ecology.
Yeah. So speaking of Neil Postman, who you studied with, he was really skeptical, for instance, of television news and the influence that it had over us. He said it wasn't good for our political and democratic discourse. I wonder what he would make of cell phones and whether you agreed with his assessment of technology that at that time was really changing the world in communication.
Well, I didn't agree with him at all. I loved him. He was my favorite professor. He was an inspiring teacher. But I, as a teacher, failed utterly to teach Postman that indeed there were good effects of media, including television. He didn't have much use for personal computers either because they had screens. And he thought, basically, I once had a conversation with him. He said, it's another kind of television. I said, no, it isn't. You can write on this. You can create content and send it out on the computer. And he shook his head and said, no, you know, it still has the same problem. But I think, look, all media, and this gets back to my metaphor of knives, there's no doubt that, you know, phones and computers and television, you know, they can do damaging things to society and have done damaging things. And, you know, very quickly, if you think about, for example, Ezra Klein's op-ed in the New York Times a month ago, the Internet, Twitter in particular, is a two-edged sword. You find truth on there, and you also find a cesspool of misinformation. The key is being able to sort that difference out, and we have never had a more effective way of finding the truth, even though we're being bombarded by all this nonsense.
But it doesn't seem like it's working all that well, does it? I mean, you know, especially in the last few years, when there is, I think, a more concerted effort to spread misinformation and to have it influence things like our politics, I guess I don't feel like the human control over our technology is sufficiently, I guess, pushing back against that.
Well, it's a question of what your gauge is. Biden did beat Trump in the 2020 election. The fact of the matter is Hillary Clinton won the popular vote in the 2016 election. So the fault is not technology. The fault is our archaic electoral college system. And there are a lot of bad things happening. You know, getting back again to the pandemic, a lot of misinformation is out there, but we did get on top of it. You know, the pandemic is finally receding. It's not over yet. So, look, we live in very dangerous times, and there's no doubt about that, and this is not a time to say, hey, don't worry, everything is okay. We have to be vigilant as never before, but we have the capability of getting on top of it.
Yeah. Okay, Paul Levinson, it was really, really wonderful to have you here for this conversation. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
That's it for us this week. Come back on Monday when we're going to talk with author Ed Yong about how animals perceive the world and how humans have altered that and how we can live in closer concert with them. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk again on Monday.